I can't believe I won.
And you still got people out there with double masks and face shields and shit. Look into it.
You can tell it's real because it looks so fake.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Look Into It. Tonight, no conspiracies, man. Tonight, if you want conspiracies, Tinfoil Hat just released some shit. Jay Dyer just released some shit. You just go to Ryan Dawson's YouTube, whatever. Tonight, we're just talking about old Mexican stories with my buddy, comedian, George Perez. What's up, George?
What's up, my boy? How you doing, brother?
I'm good, man. I'm good.
Had a blast with you, dog, on the last podcast, man. Gracias.
Hey, thank you for having me. I appreciate that. How could people find that podcast? What's the name of it again?
George Perez Stories on anything. But go to YouTube because they pay me more.
Okay. Yeah, we had a good time, man. Yeah. That was hilarious, man. On that one, I went through shit, like my whole fucking life. Now on this one, I want to go through your life, man.
Hell yeah.
I met you at the Comedy Store through Joey Diaz. We ran into each other a bunch of times. I remember the first time I saw you on the main stage in the main room, and wow. you did some like a Mexican rooster or something, right?
Yeah, birds.
Yeah, there you go. If Mexicans were birds or what?
Yeah.
It's something like that,
Mexicans,
right?
If Mexicans were birds, we'd be roosters. We always have to go to work before everybody else.
And there's always roosters in Mexican neighborhoods. I grew up in Santa Ana off Bristol and 6th Street. And dude, there was always a fucking rooster, you know, at least like a half a block away. Always. Yeah,
not even in the cage, huh?
No, dude. You know, the crazy thing is man, growing up in a Mexican neighborhood, there's a lot of different things than white neighborhoods. Because like in Mexican neighborhoods, we let our dogs out, and they're roaming all over the fucking place.
You right? Know what I mean?
Yeah, like white people, they keep their dogs inside, and they never let them if their dog got out, their dogs freak the fuck out. They start fucking running full clip. They put up signs, "Help me find my dog," and all that shit. That you never find that in a Mexican neighborhood. In a Mexican neighborhood, dogs are like cats. Yeah, we let them go. Shit. They'll come back like 5 hours later. They'll come back. We had a Dalmatian named Spotty, and Spotty would like shake the fucking gate, like, let me out. And fuck, my brother would go, let Spotty out. I'm like, oh, I don't want to let fucking Spotty out. And I go out, open the fucking gate, let the fucking dog out. Who knows where the fucking dog went? And then when the dog comes back, the dog starts shaking the fucking fence again. And my brother goes, let Spotty. I'm like, you fine, let him out. Go, let him fucking in. And I'm like, out there, fucking open the gate. Spotty runs in.
One of my baby's moms used to do that.
One of your baby's moms?
Yeah. We let her out, and she come back like a week later.
Man, white people and their dogs, dude. It's totally different.
Yeah, well, they love them, bro. You know, like, it's their friends. They trust them.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like,
we have dogs, and we're just like, I remember, dude, my mom would buy a gigantic bag of plain wrapped dog food. We had a big one, dude. You buy a big ass fucking like 5 foot tall bag for like $4 and shit at Superfoods. And dude, we were too lazy to feed the dog. Ants would get all up in it, and we were just too lazy. The dog, dude, my dog would just tear down the fucking trash cans, would go into the trash can, said, if you ain't gonna feed me, fuck it, I'm going into the trash can. And then we'd go out there and fucking have to pick up the trash and shit.
Yeah, he was like, you want to be lazy? I'll teach you a fucking lesson. Plus, he liked the trash cans because there was the ants in there too.
Dude, the ants were everywhere, man. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in the city of Orange, but all the baby's moms are from Santana.
Yeah, Orange is like, when I was growing up, Orange was like, ooh, look at you living in Orange. You know what I mean?
It's like that, but I lived on the part where we bordered Santana. So it was just
What street? What street?
Off of a Chapman and Flower.
Okay. So that was like a part like right there, Santa Ana, Orange, Tustin, like the white people that lived in Santa Ana on the like mm-hmm. that one little border, they would lie and say they lived in Tustin in Orange, because they, if you said you lived in Santa Ana, people like frowned, like, oh, you live in Santa Ana. So they would say, even though their mail said Santa Ana, they would say, oh, I live in Tustin.
I live in Costa Mesa.
Exactly. Same thing, Costa Mesa. So you're born and raised in Orange.
Born and raised in Orange, homie.
You might want to tell people you lived in Santa Ana, though, dog.
Hell no, Orange, we were the business. Like, it was a trip. Like, where I went to school, we were still, Mexicans were the dominant in all the schools I went to. We didn't have money to go to the good schools.
What school did you go to? What high school?
I went to Orange High.
Okay, okay. Yeah. What about junior high?
I went to Portola.
Oh,
that
shit.
That was the first time I met somebody from Santa Ana, was because they sent all the bad kids. Because our school, I lived on the border of Garden Grove, Santa Ana, Anaheim, and Orange.
So. Dude, right there, you live by the main place.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, yeah, that's like right by the riverbed and the five and the 22. I lived right there too. I lived all over. I lived off. I grew up off on 6th Street, right where Our Lady of Pilar is, the church. Right there, you know what I'm talking about, right?
Yeah, that area was like, they had the best sherm there back in the
day. Yeah, but then when my stepdad, when he left, you know, we're barely hanging on. My mom was making $150 a week, raising three kids. So yeah. We had to move into an apartment. We moved into the apartment on Memory Lane in Bristol. You know where that?
Dog, I know exactly. Yeah, it's where the golf course is now.
Yes, yes. It used to be some shitty ass apartments. They knocked them all down, and then they built some other apartments.
Dog.
My backyard, like we would have my back patio on the other side of the fence was the riverbed. You jump the fence, we're in the riverbed right there.
Yeah, see, you know where La Vida turns into Bristol?
Yes, dog. I was right. That's where I live.
That's where we were at all the time. That's a trip I never ran into you.
How old are you?
I'm 45.
Okay. I'm a little older than you.
How old are you?
I'm 52.
Oh, you're almost as old as the speed limit, dog. You're good. Yeah, see, you were in my brother's era. Like, you were going to the Australian Beach Club. Right there at the city?
Yeah, yeah.
Remember the $1.50 show?
Hell yeah, dude. The city? Are you kidding? Damn. That was my spot. We always went to the movies there.
Yeah. But you know what's crazy is I heard that there was a strip club in Santa Ana, too. Like, they called it Santa Ana Hills or something.
Really? I never heard about that.
Yeah.
The strip club I worked at was, I worked at two. The first one I worked at was in the Valley. Off on Sepulveda and Roscoe. Sometimes it's called the Oddball. Sometimes it's called the Valley Ball. They go back and forth. But that's where I started. And then the owner of that club, or the owners of those clubs, owned two other clubs by the airport, real close to each other, the Bear Elegance and the Jet Strip. They were like a mile apart.
Those are good clubs.
Yeah, yeah. Jet Strip was the dirty one. That's where they put the slightly low-quality girls, but they were dirty. And Bear Elegance was, oh, we got to have a classy club. The hotter chicks were at Bear Elegance, and they didn't get as dirty.
No section wounds, no tattoos.
If you had tattoos, you had to cover them with makeup and shit.
No way.
Yeah, dude, there was.
How did you get into it, though, dog? Were you like the door guy, the bartender, the DJ?
Dude, the way I got into it, it's like, dude, that's like an hour story. I want to get into you. I mean, it's a long story. Okay. But you work at a strip club part-time now, right?
Yeah, dude, I've been in the strip club business for 18 years now.
Holy shit. I was in it for 10 years.
Yeah, hey, isn't it fucking, it's like, it's almost as hard as jujitsu.
Yeah.
There's some chokeholds in there you cannot get out of, dog.
How did you get in the strip club? How was that? What job did you have right before the strip club, and how did you get in? What was the transition?
Oh, it's a crazy story. So back then, I used to be a cement mason. I was a finisher. And then I started doing comedy, and I quit being a cement mason, and then I worked.
Okay, back up. How the fuck you go from a cement mason to doing comedy? You were making everybody laugh at the work site?
No, I've always been into comedy, and then one of my baby's moms took me to an underground comedy show, and then I went up there, and then like the head.
Wait a minute. She took you to a show and you went up?
Yeah.
How does that happen?
Well, the comedian on stage was like doing your mama jokes. He was like, I'll battle in. He was eating up all the comedians. Then he was like, I'll battle anybody in the crowd. And all my homies were like, you better fucking go right now.
Oh, shit. Dude, recently I've been watching your Yo Mama jokes. You were on MTV Yo Mama jokes, right? Can we look that up? We got to. What is the best video that we could look
it's
up?
It's on my Instagram. Comedy? George P. Comedy.
George P. Comedy.
Yeah.
I like that. Put that picture right there with that Frank that looks like an octopus. That's like Mexicans. That's Mexican seafood. When you get seafood at a Santa Fe spring swap meet.
Hey, you know, like, that's what I love about being a comedian. Like, everyone has their own style. I just love being the Chicano homie.
Hit that one right there. The one on the second row. The second row. Hit that. Let's watch that shit. Dude, this is so good.
These fools can't hang. Let's battle. Your mama's so ghetto, when her water broke, it was Kool-Aid.
That sucks.
Your mom's so country, when she got in the elevator, she thought it was a mobile home.
Your mom's so nasty, when she was a Red Lobster, they kick her out for bringing her own crab. What'd you do, tattoo yourself in the dark? Your mama's so fat, she got sharks on her toilet.
Your mama's so fat, she stepped on a skeleton one at a time.
That's old.
This coming from Mimi from Drew Carey Show.
And this coming from Drew Carey from Drew Carey Show.
The under part of your stomach is so big that in the event of a plane crash, it can be a flotation device. Your mom's so stupid, she got dumbbells in the trunk, talking about she pushing weight. You're so ugly, every day can't be Halloween. Take off your mask, I want to see your real face.
That was stupid.
Your mom's so fat, when she wears Nikes, they spell Nickelodeon. Hey, where were you going, on the freeway? I mean, that's where most accidents occur, right? Your mom is like Lucky, she's still the low price leader.
That was a hot round. Represent Los Feliz. These
fools can't. Yeah, that was a while ago, dude.
Now, the other one, the one on top, dude. You're 18.
Better one.
Yeah, the one. Hit that one, too. Hit that.
It came down to two finalists in each hood. In the battle for Hawthorne, Ivy and JT served up the competition. While in Los Feliz, George and James went toe-to-toe to see who would make it to the finals.
Let's battle.
Your mom's so stupid, she thought Fruit Punch was a gay boxer.
But your mama's so ugly, I told her to take out the trash. She moved out my house.
You look like a Nick Cannon crackhead.
Is that Richard Pryor or your mama on your t-shirt? They both got the thick mustache. I didn't know.
Mom's so old, she saw Passion of the Christ live.
Your mama's like a shotgun. One and she blows.
Your mom got two penises and you're one of them.
Your mama's so fat, she ain't seen her waistline since 82. Is it there? Is it?
That was shitty.
Your mom's so big, I got a sign that say, don't feed the bears.
When's the last time you had?
I was at your mom's house about 10 minutes before the show. Me and all the other contestants.
Dude, he walked right into that one.
So the winner tonight, represent for Los Feliz, is, give it up, y'all, for George.
Yeah. What's up, George?
Oh, shit. That was awesome, dude.
Thank you, bro. I was a strip club DJ at that time, too.
Hey, that young, shit. That's right. You did it 18 years. Hey, let's, what is your best cartoon, those stick figure cartoons from the swap meet?
Oh, the ones I do?
Yeah. Where can we find those?
Oh, fuck. I don't know.
Don't you still do them? You don't still do them?
Those are hilarious. Yeah. You know, all these guys on Instagram started taking all my jokes that didn't have my face on it, and they started acting them out. So I was like, damn, these fools are taking my content. But I still have like four of them up. I'm working on a new one.
Okay.
You know how it is, dog, when you're just like, damn, man, give me credit, fool.
Oh, they were stealing your shit.
Yeah, they were like my cartoon. They were making skits out of them, doing their own bits.
Oh, shit. What do they say? Thievery is the best form of flattery or something like that?
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah, that's what happens every time someone steals my lady. I'm like, hey, homie, you know, he's letting me know.
So, okay, so you're working construction. Your ex, Haina, takes you to a underground comedy show. They're doing your mama jokes. And then your boy, you fucked him up.
Dude, I told that fool, your mom's like a piñata. You got to be blindfolded before you hit it. The funny part was like, who is this fool?
And then what happened from there? It just took
later,
off.
I just told my lady, hey, you know what? I got like 10 G's saved up. I'm quitting this shit. Hey, I'm going to get a daytime job. Because back then, my primos, all of them worked at Imperial Theater. And they were like, we can get you in here. And I was like, fuck it, I'm down.
Oh, shit. So Imperial Theater, what city is that in?
That's in the city of Anaheim. We don't, because the guy I worked for, he used to own Imperial, California Girls, TJ's, and Mr. J's. Remember Mr. J's?
Yeah, the All Orange County Club.
Sam Tripoli and I are coming to your town. Catch us on the road doing tinfoil hat comedy. Follow me on Instagram at tinfoil hat comedy night.
February 24th, we'll be in Spokane, Washington. February 25th, we'll be in Tacoma, Washington.
Go to samtripoli.com for more information and to buy your tickets. See you on the road.
Do you remember, it was around for just a little bit, The Fun House?
I heard of it.
Remember The Fun House? It was on Beach Boulevard?
Yes.
That was the fourth club owned by the owner that owned the clubs that I worked at. Okay. The owners, there was two owners. They owned three clubs, one in the Valley and then two right by the airport. But then they also expanded to Orange County and opened up The Fun House. That didn't last too long.
But, yeah, it's hard having that many clubs, dude.
Yeah. It didn't last. It didn't last that long, and it was hard to get a nude license or whatever, because that one was the only club that allowed alcohol, but the girls couldn't get nude. Now, the other three clubs, you couldn't have alcohol, but they got nude, but you could see pussy. Like, for some reason in LA County, if you're serving alcohol, you can't show the pussy. You got to serve like orange juice and Diet Cokes for like $9. You know what I mean?
You want to see this pussy, you got to buy some OJ, give us $9.
But the crazy thing is, the owners and everybody, they let you sneak alcohol in. Like, they're just pretend they didn't see it. They wanted you to bring fucking out. So everyone thinks they're slick and they're bringing the little bottles and pouring it into their $9 Diet Cokes. And they think that they're being slick. Like, dude, we're watching you on the camera do it. You know, we want you drunk so that you spend more money.
what did you do at the Fun House? Were you the DJ?
I was never at the Fun House. I was only at the Oddball in the Valley and Bare Elegance by the airport. At first I got in as a floater. I was counting the table dances. You know what I mean? I was keeping track of all the girls doing dances and shit. And like, bitch, you owe $300 to the bar. And they tipped you. You were making, my job was to make sure they didn't rip off the club, because they owed the club half of every dance. And when the customer gave them $30 a song and they do like three or four songs, half that money, they got to pay the bar. So I'm the one that kept track of that, but they're the ones that paid me, which was just like a mad conflict of interest. But
yeah, at the end of the day, you could be like, hey, I didn't mark that at the dance, break me off 10.
Hey, I don't know. I thought you did 8. But so you had family members already in the strip club business.
Yeah, they're in the club. And
so you got in easy.
They threw me in like to the fucking lion. So my first.
What was your first job? What was your first job first day?
DJ.
DJ first day.
And back then, because I had all the CDs, so they're like, dog, you already have all the jams. Remember, it was CDs back then.
Yeah, totally, totally.
It wasn't no fucking MP. So I walked in with my two leather fucking bags of CDs. And then I had confidence, you know? I was like, I'm down to make fun of these bitches, do whatever. Like, what's up?
And so day one, so at first, I'm sure you didn't get no Friday and Saturday night. They probably gave you like that Monday day and the Saturday day shift.
Well, they gave me Monday through Friday day.
Exactly. You go in the day shifts. When you come in, you go in the day shifts. Like, yes. I started when I got in, they gave me Monday through Thursday, day shift, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. They didn't even have a fucking floater during the day because they had been talking about it. They go, we need a floater during the day, because during the day, the DJ was counting the dances. The DJ had to fucking bring the girls on stage and off stage and promote the lap dances, but they were also keeping track. They all, in between the songs, they got a clipboard. So the DJs were complaining. They go, dude, we need a floater during the day, because they had one at night. At night, they had one at night. But so when I came in, they go, okay, finally, we got a floater during the day. So I was just with a clipboard keeping track of table dances.
Right, marking a line for everything.
What year, do you remember what year you started? I started in 93. November 93.
I started in 2002.
Oh, damn. That's when I was on my way out.
Yeah, you were in like the prime.
Oh, dude, I was around during the introduction of lap dances on the West Coast. Because when I first started, there was no lap dances. It was just table dances, which were not at your table. Before I came, maybe they started at your table, like the guy sitting at the table, and they pay a girl $20 to dance like in front of them and kind of like sit on their lap and shit like that. But by the time I started, they already moved that, because it was like an evolution. They already moved in. They go, okay, instead of having girls pay customers $20 to dance in front of them where they're sitting, they decided to make booths, like table dance booths. So you're getting a table dance, but now you're going to a booth, and where you sit down and the girls in a little booth, and they had like fucking 10 of them, dude, 10 of them lined up against the wall. So it was, they got organized and shit. So when I got there, it was like 10 booths, and sometimes all 10 booths were filled. That girls, boom, it was busy, boom, boom, it was filled. And then the guys would sit on their chair and they'd just be like this, looking at the girl, and the girl would be in a booth getting naked and putting their fucking pussy right in their face. And then I'm just sitting there keeping track, making sure they pay the bar what they owe, half the money. But we heard about lap dances. We heard about them, and like, oh, you know what they do at the strip clubs in Montreal? You know what they do at the strip clubs down in Miami, in Florida? Dude, they do lap dances, dog. So that was like mythical. Like, damn, they do lap. The girls sit on your lap and fucking grind and dry them. And we're like, whoa, that's crazy. That's nuts, man. Montreal's crazy. Florida's crazy. And then they also did that shit like in bachelor parties too. Like bachelor parties did lap dances, yeah, but not at the clubs. Not at the clubs. Not in 93, 94, not at the clubs. So one day I show up to work, it's 10:45. We're about to open at 11. And this is the very beginning of lap dances on the West Coast. The manager, Jeff Wattler, he comes up and he goes, we had a meeting with all the girls. And he said, hey, listen, we're gonna start doing lap dances now. And the girl's like, what? What? He goes, yeah, you don't have to do them. You don't have to do them, but we're going to start doing them. They had one couch. They had like one, they were called couch dances, actually, not lap dances. They called them couch dances. And there was one couch. And it was like the couch was, they brought in like a couch, and it was like the back of a 57 Chevy. You know, like imagine the back of a 57 Chevy with a couch. It fit two people. Two people could sit in it. So they brought that out and they just put it on the side. They still had those 10 table dance booths. But then they put the 57 Chevy couch on the side, and all the girls were pissed. And Jeff goes, hey, you guys don't have to do them. They're not mandatory, but we're going to offer them now. They're going to be $30 a song. You don't have to do them. And the girl's like, oh my God, this is bullshit. It's going to turn into a whorehouse. This is fucking every girl's fucking complaining. But that was one girl, Serenity. Never forget this. Serenity said, shit, she was doing fucking bachelor party, so that wasn't shit to her. So we had one girl who wanted to do them. And that first day, dude, I'll never forget this shit, dude. That first day, Serenity was on the fucking couch, dude, all day, just geez, 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 all day, dude, geez, geez. And all the girls were like, they were like in backstage just looking at the bitch going, this fucking whore. They were fucking furious. And Serenity's like, geez, geez, geez. The guys, every guy in the club was looking over at the couch dancers going, holy shit, I want one of those. The girls were dancing on stage, totally naked. Nobody was looking at the girls. They were looking at the guy and the girl that were clothed, but dry humping.
Yeah.
They weren't even looking at the naked girl. They couldn't fucking believe it. Their heads were exploding. And then Serenity was all day, goose, 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 goose. Dude, she did like 55 dances that first day. And at 40, she had to take a break. Dude, she went out in the back. She put on her fucking, she put on a robe and was just smoking cigarettes, just fucking sweating, dude. She was tired. Fucking like a water cast, dog. A water cash, dog. She looked like fucking Tekashi 6ix9ine with those fucking stacks of cash, dude. And then the next day, there was another girl said, fuck that. I'm going to do that shit too. Mercedes. That was her stripper. Ooh. I'll never forget this shit. Mercedes said, fuck it. Next day, it was Mercedes and fucking Serenity. The goose, the goose, the goose, the goose, the goose. Dude, they were crushing it. They each of them did 50 fucking dances. People were losing their goddamn mind. And then little by little, the girls started doing them. And little by little, they converted. They took two of those fucking table dances and put little mini couches in them. And then they put five mini couches in them. And then within 6 months, those table dance booths, nobody wanted table dances. They're like, fuck that. Well, we could see the pussy on stage. We want some dry humping action.
Yeah.
So then little by little, dude, all those table dance booths turned into couch dancing booths. And then fuck, it just evolved into crazy shit. And then we would get raided, and then they would come in and raid, because all the clubs started doing it. The Bob's Classy Lady started doing it.
They didn't have the license for it, huh?
Yes, it would, dude. There was this stuff, it was just so new. The laws were just so, they didn't know what to do with this shit. Because technically they're like, hey, is it legal for a girl to dance in front of a guy sitting down on a couch? And they go, well, I don't see anything wrong with that. Well, is it legal if they brush their knee with their butt? It doesn't say anywhere. It's not written down that it's illegal. So what about if they brush their butt and stay on the knee for 5 seconds? No. What about if they stay for 20 seconds on the knee? What if they move down the thigh? What if they sit on their lap for a second and get up? And I'm like, damn, we don't know, dude. There's nothing written. So they just kept taking it further and further. And then they would get raided. And then we'd have to clean it up for 2 months. And then slowly we'd go back. And then boom, then we started adding, like, can we add a curtain and a little privacy to the booth? And it would be like see-through. And then the owners would just be like, let's see how long we can get away. Because the customers, the more private they were, the more money they're going to spend.
Hell yeah.
Right? So then they just, little by little, they got more private. And then they put a see-through curtain. And then they put two see-through curtains. And it was kind of, you could barely see through. And then you get raided. And then boom, take down the curtains. And then little by little, put the curtain back up. Put a darker curtain. And then you get raided. Boom. And then you come back. And dude, they had a second room at the Oddball, and they were like converting that shit to like super private dances where you go in the back room and all that shit. So little by little, it just got gnarlier and gnarlier and crazier, dude. And it just, dude, these chicks are going crazy. And then everybody did couch dances. Everybody was like, if you didn't do couch dances, a lot of girls quit and they just, you know, started doing real estate or fucking found some sugar daddy. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, because
they all do real estate. It's hilarious.
I know, because they have all those customers too, and they know what to do to close a deal. You know what I'm saying? Like, hey, at the club I work at right now, it's fully nude, and there's a curtain that's like cloth, like shut,
like it's blacked out.
Yeah, it's like, it's thicker than like Shaquille O'Neal's neck. They got half hour dances now. Like, hey, you can kick it back there for half an hour.
Yeah, dude, crazy. What do the girls like look like at your club?
You know what? We have tens, we have nines.
What? You got tens?
Yeah, we got some tens.
Damn. What's the name of the club?
TJ Showgirls in the City of 10.
TJ, oh, I remember that. It was been around. Yeah. Okay, yeah, yeah.
It's one of the oldest clubs. We're the only club to still have a full nude license.
Damn.
All the other clubs sold, and we still have the same owner, so it's like grandfathered in.
So what days do you work?
Monday through Friday, day shift. But I take a lot of days off to do comedy. Like, we've got a good relationship.
That's awesome, man.
It's a tip. A lot of comedians are like, you have a day job? I'm like, what do you want me to do? Sit on the couch like you all day, dog? Like, I'm not going to get, if I can get my money at 6:30, I can go do comedy at 8 anywhere.
Yeah. 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 That's huge. Okay. So you come in day one, you're a DJ.
I'm a DJ.
Now tell me off the top of your head, when you first started, what was the craziest story?
dog. So
tell me, we got all night, dude. You could take your time.
It wasn't even at Imperial, because Imperial was more high class. Like, okay, if you could be a country club, they had showers in there. They had their own locker.
Dude, we had a shower. Eventually, we built a shower fucking dance, dude.
They had 30 showers.
How many?
30.
30 showers.
We used to have 40 girls on the shifts.
Even during the day?
Yeah.
What the? That's Imperial.
Yeah.
But now you work at TJ's.
Yeah, now I work at TJ's in...
Same owner? Same owner?
Same owner.
Okay, so you just transferred.
Yeah, well, what happened was I stopped DJing to go back into construction, because I was doing comedy better now, and I was like, you know what, my kids, I want to stay home with the kids, and I just do comedy at night. Then the kids got older, then I went to prison, and I got out, and that same owner was like, what's up, homie, you need a job? I was like,
Now, why did you quit the strip club to go back to construction?
Because, you know, I'm young, I'm with the younger woman, and she can't handle the fact.
Oh, okay, I got it. You got a girl, and she's like, fuck that, okay.
Yeah. And I'm coming home, giving her like 400. I go, look, here's 400 bucks a day, and I just keep two for me. That way, that's for the bills. So I was giving her like 1,200 a week for the bills in the house.
She still couldn't handle it.
Nah.
Yeah, that's the way I went. When I first started, the girlfriend I had, she immediately broke up with me, but then she got back together with me and said, okay, I can handle it. Because I'm not going to quit. Because I used to work at a check cashing store. I used to be a manager of five check cashing stores, and then the riots. Oh, we got robbed. I almost got killed. My partner got it, dude, that's why I said it's going to take an hour. So we got robbed. I almost got killed during the riots, the Rodney King riots.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where were you at?
What was that?
Where were you at?
In Hawthorne, dog.
Oh, that's just ghetto. It's not like ghetto, but it's tough ghetto.
Yeah. So I managed five check cashing stores. I was the guy that was, we had, you know, employees working at the check cashing stores, cashing checks.
Sunday, December 18th, from Cancun, Mexico. Witness the first ever Combat Jiu-Jitsu Worlds Team Duel. Teams chose their five best lightweights to represent them in the premier Combat Jiu-Jitsu Tournament. All looking to win the $50,000 grand prize. Featuring 10th Planet Jiu-Jitsu with CJJ Worlds Featherweight Champion Keith Krikorian, EBI CJJ Champion Ben Eddy, and Nathan Orchard. B-Team Jiu-Jitsu with CJJ World's Lightweight Champion, Ethan Krellison, Nick Ronan, Kieran Kitchuk, and Damian Anderson. Team Alpha Male with Dustin Akbari, Trent Ebarb, Chad Mendez, and Sonya Dong. Plus, the super fight we've all been waiting for between CJJ World's Bantamweight Champion, Elias Anderson.
It is Elias Anderson.
And the UFC legend making his combat jiu-jitsu debut, Uriah Faber. Which team will take home the money and the gold? Don't miss this historical night, Sunday, December 18th, live and exclusive on UFC Fight Pass.
I wasn't the owner. There was two owners. It was two owners, and one of the owners was part owner of the three strip clubs. So he was doing check cashing to make use of that strip club money in a legit way. So he goes, you know what? He had all this money. He owned strip clubs. He goes, hey, I'm going to invest in check cashing stores. He liked
when girls bounced on guys, but he didn't like when the checks bounced on him.
So I was working for a guy who owned strip clubs. So when we got robbed, during the riots, dude, fuck, when it all went down, there was two managers. It was me and a guy named Billy. We were both the managers. That was five stores on El Segundo, Crenshaw, fucking all over, like in Hawthorne and Inglewood.
Yeah, where people can't get banks.
Yeah, so the day of the riot, the riot, like when it with the hardcore day,
like when they were like not guilty.
Yeah, when it was like Florence and Normandy and all that shit. We were all at the check cashing stores, and we were watching it on the fucking on TV, going fuck, 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 and the owner of the check cashing stores, he wasn't the owner of the strip club. There was two owners of the check cashing stores. The strip club dude, that was English Dave, and then Stewart was the main owner of the check cashing stores. And we called up, me and Billy was the other manager, and me and Billy called up Stewart and said, listen, man, dude, they're fucking breaking into everything. It's fucking nuts. It's 2 o'clock in the afternoon. So Stewart said, hey, grab all the fucking money, close all the stores, grab all the fucking money and bring it to my house. He lived in like Marina Del Rey or something like that. Or, yeah. You know what I mean? So me and Billy closed up all the stores and we took all the money, and each store had a safe in the ground, in the floor, like, and there's a piece of tile that covers it. Yeah. And there's no way you're gonna take that safe from the fucking ground. And that's where we kept the money at each location. It was five locations. Yeah. So he said, fuck that. They're breaking into everything. The riots are fucking nuts. Grab the money, close the stores. It's 2 p.m. Get the fuck out of there. So we were at the last store, me and Billy. The employees are all gone. We had all the money in a duffel bag. And I said, you want me to take the money to Stewart? Billy said, nah, I'll take it. I'll take it. And I go, okay, cool. See ya. So I went up Crenshaw because I wanted to see the fucking, I wanted to see what was up. So I lived in Hollywood. So I drove up Crenshaw to get to Hollywood instead of getting on the freeway, instead of going to the 405 and going up. I went up Crenshaw through the heart of the riots, dude. And Billy, he had the duffel bag. He went down Rosecrans the other way. He went west. He took off, and we went opposite directions. And then I get home. I'm in Hollywood. I'm in my apartment. Fucking, it's nuts. Everybody's fucking looting and rioting. Right there on Sunset and La Brea, there used to be a silo. Remember that shit? It was like Circus City. Remember that shit, silo? Yeah. Yeah. Like Circus City. There was a silo right there on La Brea and Sunset. That shit was getting fucking looted. It was getting looted. And I lived right
in there.
So I go back to my apartment and I'm chilling. And then I get a phone call a few hours later. And it's Stewart, the owner. He goes, dude, Billy's in the hospital. He got shot. I said, why? So what happened is we were being staked out. They were watching us, and they followed the guy with the duffel bag.
Wow.
They followed the guy with, if I would have taken the duffel bag, they would have followed me. But Billy decided to take the money to Stewart. So he took it. They once he hit a red light, they parked on the side, they got out, and they took the bag, and right there on, it was like Rosecrans and fucking maybe Hawthorne, and they just fucking blasted him in the stomach. And he survived. He survived. But right away, we closed down the stores for like a week, and once he got out, and then we opened them up, and now he's fucked up. He's in the hospital. So now I'm running the stores post riots.
Yeah.
And I'm the only motherfucker. I had a bulletproof vest and a fucking nine on me the whole fucking time. Dude, I'm driving around with a fucking nine. Like, dude, it was fucking scary shit.
Crazy.
It was, my mom was freaking the fuck out, dog. My mom was like, I have to work. And I was terrified. But I had to work. And Billy, once he recovered, the other owner, the guy that owned the strip clubs, he said, fuck that. Why don't you come into the strip club and be a DJ? So he went to the strip club, and I'm stuck in the check cashing stores going, fuck, man. In a crazy way, it was a blessing in disguise that he got shot. Because now he's in the strip clubs, and I'm the one still stuck in the fucking check cashing stores. So I'm like, fuck, I thought Billy was lucky. I'm like, yeah, you got shot, but damn, you're working around naked bitches and making cash. Like, mad. He was making mad. He was making like $400 or $500 a night. And I'm like, holy shit. Damn, he lucked out. Yeah, I was thinking he lucked out. So they ended up, when they robbed them, it was like, I don't know, like $25,000 or something like that. And that was operating cash for the check cashing store. So, man, we tried to keep it going. We closed a couple stores. We couldn't fucking keep it rolling. And then eventually we closed the clubs down. And we closed the stores down. And then I got brought into the strip club. That's how I got into the strip club. Once the check cashing stores went, just fucking fell apart and died, I got taken into the strip club. And that's
trippy, dog.
That's how I got the strip club job. And I stayed there for 10 years. And when I told my mom, I go, Mom, I got great news. She goes, ¿Qué, mijo? I said, I got a new job. She said, oh, thank God. I go, I'm not working the check cashing stores no more, Mom. And she said, ay, ay, gracias a Dios. And I said, I'm working at a strip club now, Mom. She goes, ay, no, 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 no strip club. I go, Mom, what are you talking about? I'm not asking you. I'm telling you that that's what I'm doing. Go, no, don't work no strip club, no. I go, Mom, it's safe. It's air conditioned. I don't want to wear a bulletproof vest 24/7. And she goes, no, no, get your bulletproof vest. Go, you got a gun? Go back. She didn't want to go, Mom, I'm going to hang up. And I said, Mom, she goes, okay, okay. I go, but are you, vas a estar encuadrado? And I'm like, oh, shit. She asked me if I was going to be naked. And I was like, oh, shit, I didn't explain that I was going to be a DJ. She thought I was telling her that I was going to start stripping, like Chippendales and shit.
Were you ripped up back then?
Was that? No. I've never been ripped, dog. I've been ripped once, like 2014, when I fought Hoyler Gracie in the rematch. I had a little six pack, but that's it. It lasted two days.
That's it.
But yeah, so then I got into the strip club working day shift as a floater, and then little by little, I would pick up a DJ shift like a Monday night, and like, you know.
A whole different outlook, huh?
And yeah, little by little. They're not going to give you the Friday and Saturday nights. That's where all the money's at. So damn. You got. So I would always tell everybody, it's easy to get a job at a strip club. Easy. You just got to go in and say, hey, listen, if you need a DJ for Saturday day or Monday day, I'm available. That's all I have available. I love Monday days and I love Saturday days. Dude, you get hired right away because nobody wants to work those shifts. You know what I mean? A manager, a smart manager, go, wait a minute, leave your number. We might need you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because you make like $30 a shift working Saturday day. There'd be like one motherfucking dude in there at 1 p.m. and you got two girls. Oh, dude, that's death. Those day shifts, oh yeah, my dude. God. You know what I'm talking about?
I've been doing it for like 18 years now, so I built like a clientele of customers and I built a clientele of girls.
Well, how do you build a clientele of customers? Explain that.
You know, like I greet them. It's the way I set the atmosphere. When you come into my club, there's hip hop, but it's not trashy. It's classic rock, oldies, funk. Shit that people 30 and up want to hear. And those are the clients I want.
Yeah.
Because they got jobs. They got things to do.
You can't play Slayer and you can't play NWA.
We do sometimes.
Saturday nights, maybe. Oh, you know when I play Slayer? Is when it's closing time and we're trying to get these motherfuckers out, you play Angel of Death and you play loud. Loud.
No, like on my Mondays, I average anywhere from 200 to 400.
Damn, that's pretty good. On my Monday day, shit, $40, $50.
I remember those days, and it's just, yeah.
But darkness. People would say, you're so lucky you work at a strip club. I'm like, dude, it's dark, dude. There's like, dude, them day shifts fucking, they'll kill your soul.
You're like, I don't like none of these bitches.
There's like two or three girls. We didn't have like 40 girls during the day ever.
No, dude, now it's a whole different league. It's a whole different league now. It's like, because so many guys just want to come on their lunch break.
Yeah, yeah.
They got an hour, come in, close the curtain, get the thing, jam out.
All of the regulars and every regular got a different strategy on how to get the girls. Because every guy in there is trying to hook up with the stripper.
Straight up.
Everybody. And then you got the guys that come in and they hang out by the bar and they just want to have a cup of coffee and kind of be the friend of the bartender.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They're like, oh, I'm not tipping these girls. I'm not even here for the pussy. I'm just here just because I'm killing time. And, you know, the waitress is nice. You know, I'm like, bitch, you're trying to fuck. You're trying to just pretend like you don't want to.
Yeah. But at my club, I got customers that I've known now for like 8-9 years. Is that a trip? I got fools that come in for 8-9 years now. They give me Christmas presents, dog.
Hell yeah, they want to be nice to you. And you got to be nice. You got to be nice to the DJ.
Yeah.
You gotta be nice. If you're smart, you're going to a strip club, you better be nice to the guys that work there because those are the ones that are going to tell you about the girls that don't have boyfriends.
Yeah, or the ones like, hey, dog, she lies a lot. Hey, watch out.
Exactly, exactly. Because, you know, as a strip club patron, they always want to know which ones are single. Because then if they got if they're spending money on a girl that has a boyfriend who's going to pick them up after work, they're just wasting their money. Like, how are you going to make this happen? Their boyfriend is going to pick them up. You know what I mean? So you never know. That's a waste of time. So So as a customer, you want to know, and the only one's going to tell you is like the floater or the DJ, which girl just broke up with her boyfriend and is lost.
I want that upper body clench. That's what I'm going after. With the underhook, looking for double underhooks. Fucking, that's a juicy ass clench. Perfect double underhooks. You're on your side, boom. That's all perfect. That's huge. In my game, for me, I'm like, I've got this motherfucker. First fight in Abu Dhabi 2003 against Gustavo Dantas. I got right in and got perfect double underhooks. I'm like, oh my God, I had him in a lockdown, perfect double underhook, really quick. He just gave it to me. I'm like, and I was just sitting there going, oh my God, he just gave it to me. That was just off the front headlock, 100%. Push into him, you wanna smash him and then jump on that leg. You wanna rush him so they don't have so they're off balance. You jump on that leg, you hook that leg, you're gonna take their back or put them in the truck. Either one. Does that make sense?
You know what? I've had a couple girls marry the customers, bro.
That happens, right?
The craziest shit that happened, though, is I had a girl, this stripper, she brought her daughter to be the bartender.
Smart.
No.
No, I'm kidding.
It was fucking, yeah. And the mom, she did everything. She used to have KY jelly right there, like chilling when she would talk to customers. She would just hit it on her shoulder.
That's hilarious.
The term, she's like, George, in professional sports, it's pay-per-view. In here, it's pay-per-due.
How gnarly do the girls get at your club? It all depends on the cash?
I say any club. Any club, if it's full nude. At topless, it ain't going down, player. Topless don't have the curtains that shut. None of that shit. But do you remember the dirtiest club I ever been to was this club called the Flamingo?
Where at? What city?
State College and Ball in Anaheim.
I'd never been there.
Dog, it was ghetto dirty. Like ghetto dirty.
Yeah.
80
yeah.
bucks. You're coming out with like chlamydia crabs. And a used condom.
Man, strip clubs are fucking hysterical. And then every girl got a different story. You know what I mean? You got the girl, you got the stripper that's stripping because she came to Hollywood to be an actress and it ain't working out. So she's just stripping and she's low key. She's like, get me on stage. Don't put me on stage. You know what I mean? And then you got the girl that is going to real estate school. It's because I'm only stripping until I get my real estate license. Yeah. And then you got the stripper that has three kids. It's like, bitch, I'm trying to pay my fucking rent, dog. You know what I mean? Right? Everyone. And then you got the rock star stripper, you know, who's only stripping until she makes it in the music business. Yeah, I knew one very well. I made music with her.
Now it's different, dog, because now they have Instagram accounts and all this stuff. So they channel their own customers on their Instagrams and Snapchats. Hey, what's up? This is where I'm working tonight. Who wants to see me?
Yeah. It's crazy, right?
Yeah, it's legitly like, I know girls that make $500 a day working 4 hours, not even doing nothing dirty, dog.
Yeah.
Chilling, talking.
Yeah.
As I tell people, strip clubs save marriages. Some guys go in there just to talk to a girl and then they leave. And then there's no phone number, no nothing. They just want to like vent to somebody.
Yeah.
And then they go home and they love their wife.
Yeah. 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 Some guys just, they just need, even if they're pretending, they just need a girl. They need a girl to adore them.
Just straight up.
Yeah. A girl to, want them and to admire them. And these strippers are really good at faking that shit. So all they're really doing is they're paying them to pretend they like them. If there a lot of guys out there, they can't get that affection in real life. They just can't. But they go to a strip club, shit. It's like, it's the opposite. It's the opposite. Strip club is the opposite of reality. In reality, a guy walks into a club, ain't no bitches staring at him. Ain't no bitches talking to him. That's reality. Mm-hmm. But in a strip club, it's like some fantasy world. You walk in, every bitch like, would you like a lap dance? Hey, you want any company?
When you go to a nightclub, say you go to a nightclub, you're going to spend $100.
And no girl going to look at you.
And you're going to ask a girl to dance, they're going to be like, hell no. You go to a strip club, no girl's going to be like, no, I don't want to dance.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So it's the opposite of reality. Mm-hmm. And, some guys get lost in it. You know, some guys,
I feel some fools lose it all, dog. The craziest shit that happened, though, is this one customer. Like, I'm never a friend to these fools. Like, hey, come over to my house and eat. But I would meet up with this fool because he had good chronic. And
because he had good chronic.
He would sell steroids and I would sell them to my homies and we'd just flip it.
Yeah.
And this fool ended up getting one of the girls pregnant. And he was like, nah, we're going to keep it. And she was like, hell no. She fucking went to Planned Parenthood, got rid of that shit. And this motherfucker came with like a tow truck, repoed her car, took everything. When the girl came out, dog, and started shooting at him with the .22.
Dude, that's a movie, dog. That's a movie. Damn, dude falls in love with the stripper and she's just playing him the whole time.
Oh.
That happens all the guy. There was a guy back in the day, super man. I could go on all night, dog. I just picked each fucking customer. I got so many customers. There was one, this guy's name was Andrew. And he was a regular, super nice guy. He was an import, export. Nobody knew exactly what he did, but he was a successful businessman. He wasn't like a multimillionaire, but he had enough money to burn on strippers where it didn't hurt him. You know, he liked like maybe three girls and he was always in that motherfucker. We always saw Andrew. Andrew always came into the guy. He was there every day. He did his business all day and then he'd come in and he liked like two or three girls and he'd spend money on. Dude, they were all, he would never try to fuck them, but he would get like gnarly lap dances, but he never tried to fuck them and all the girls trusted him. And he would take them shopping, and anytime their fucking transmission fell out of their car, he would pay for it. And they were like, you know, some girls were manipulating and lying and shit.
Yeah.
Strippers know how to lie when it comes to like being in distress. They're always in distress. Oh my God. So they're just, and the only thing that's gonna save them is like, oh my God, I'm so sad. My fucking transmission just fell out of my car. And they always got the transmission story down. They always got that one. You know how many times I heard the transmission story? Dude, I'm just there. I'm just a fly on the wall. I'm like in that dimension. Just there's customers coming in. Every customer got their own game. They all got their own plan. Some just come in and go, dude, fuck the plan. I'm going to drop some cash and hopefully I get my dick sucked in the fucking lap dance. Dudes just come in like, I'm just going to. And there was one guy, he's dead now. He would come in. He had like long hair, old man, long hair though. He looked like fucking Mick Jagger. He had long hair and he would just come in and reek of weed. He would just come in and nobody knew his name. He would just come in and just find his girl and like fucking throw down cash and offer him like, you want to make fucking $2,000? Come up to my mansion in the fucking Hollywood Hills. He just came in for business. He goes, I'm going to find the hottest chick. I'm going to spend a lot of money on her in the lap dance booth, and then I'm going to offer her a lot more cash if she comes to my house with me. Like, he didn't fuck around. And we didn't know his name or anything. We just called him Wild Man. This motherfucker was wild, dude. He didn't give a fuck. His game was like, let's get to the fucking point, dog. Don't try to be, he didn't come in trying to be, oh, I'm drinking coffee and I'm going to fucking play the long game and I'm going to fucking earn their trust within 5 years and then we're going to be friends and then they're going to be in the friend zone and then they're going to fucking, their transmission's going to fall out of their fucking car. That always happens, right? He didn't give a fuck. Wild Man just came, he didn't give a fuck. And then after, we didn't know, he was like, dude, this guy is fucking insane. And then he would start calling. And I'm the DJ and shit. You answer the fucking phone, he'd call and goes, hey, how many girls you got on? I'm like, oh, we got fucking 15 girls. Go, who, name them off. You got to name off London, Candy, fucking Emily. You know, you name off all the girls. He goes, okay, cool, I'm coming in. Boom. And then he would show in. He would show up. Once he started calling, he felt like once we hooked him up on the phone, like, should he waste this fucking time? Should he come in? And we say, yeah, we got fucking Danny's here, dog. Danny's here. Yeah, come on. Yeah, okay. And so he'd come in. And then he would, first he came in, he smelled like weed. Now he'd come in to like pay us back, like the door guy, because I'm the DJ, but I'm the door guy too. Boom, I'm the DJ, I'm the door guy. Sometimes we have a door guy Saturday night. I can't do both. It's too busy. We need a fucking door guy. It's too busy. But during the day, you do both. You're like, all right, put those hands together for Candy. And you go, okay, $10, cool.
Yeah.
You gotta buy two drinks each. No, two drinks. All right, guys, put those hands together for Candy. Yes, $20. Yes. All right, coming up to the stage. You know what I mean?
I know that.
The life of the DJ, no matter what's going on, no matter what conversation you're in.
You're like a stripper.
Every 2:45, you got to say, put those hands together. Make some noise out there. All right, guys, let me hear it out there for, you know what I mean? Every 2 minute, 45 seconds, no matter what conversation you got going with the manager, with one of the girls, the door guy, the fucking bouncer, the floater, you got some conversation. All day, it's just conversations. But at 2:45, shit.
Hey, that's
all right, guys. Put those hands together for Candy. You better be like a clock. You know what I mean?
It's so, dropped. Now it's every 1:45 to 2 minutes.
What? Damn. Yeah. Dude, I thought 2:45 was crazy. Dude, yeah. For 10 years, it's like, I don't give a fuck if it's in a guided DeVita. I don't give a fuck if it's Stairway to Heaven. You're cutting that shit at 2:45 because every song is money. If there's 13 guys doing dances and they're paying per song, you playing fucking The Pestilence by Creator, that's a 9-minute song, dog. You're killing us. So whatever, you better fade that shit at 2:45. And now you're saying it's 1:45?
1:45, 2 minutes.
Insane. Yeah. That's insane. They're getting too crazy. Come on, dog. Why you got to be like that? 2:45 was short enough. 2:45 was short enough.
Yeah, now fools are like, now you know what it is too, is now all the rap songs ain't even longer than 2 minutes.
Totally. There's a lot of rap songs that are like 1 minute now. Like Shake Will, like that's the new shit. Like it's like then real quick, in and out, boom, 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 boom.
Hey, but speaking of customers, I feel bad. I fucked up a customer's life once. Cause he didn't know. I don't tell these fools I'm a comedian. So this fool went to the Brea Improv and I was on stage. And then, like, his wife, you know, you're outside taking
pictures. Oh, shit, I already, his wife.
And his wife comes up to me. She goes, oh, my God, my husband says he knows you. I'm like, your husband? She's like, yeah, Frank. How do you know him? I'm like, Frank's not your husband. She's like, what do you mean he's not my, I know that folk through the strip club.
Like, oh.
I was like, oh, I didn't know, dog. You know what I mean?
I thought you were going to tell me some fucking Jedi shit that you figured out and you saved his ass. I thought you were going to tell me that, but you fucked up. You fucked up.
I was new and young. I didn't know. I was like, oh, like, I don't know. Like,
you fucked up, dog.
I know.
You blew it.
I fucked up, but he became a full-time customer, bro. So I didn't.
Hey, you know what? In the end, it was a blessing in disguise.
For all your 10th Planet Jiu-Jitsu merchandise, please visit 10thplanetjj.com/shop. We also got a Look Into It t-shirt that just dropped. Thank you very much for your support.
Yeah.
So Wild Man, right? He started coming in. And when he would come in, we would call and we would tell him, okay, come in. So we started working with him. So he would come in and we never charge him. We just have him sign the fucking thing. Just sign, boom. We know this guy's throwing down. He comes in and fucking finds a girl, throws cash. Boom, you want 4,000, you come to my house. He was like a dick. But he was like direct, right? Old guy with long hair. Mysterious man, wild man. Mysterious.
Hey, guys, too, huh? Like, hey, here's $100. I'm good.
He never gave me money, but he would give us, and this was before, when weed was still illegal. It wasn't legal yet. So it was like, you got to have a good weed. Right now, everybody's a weed dealer. I can get a weed all over the fucking place. I haven't bought weed in fucking 10 years. People just give me weed. You know what I mean? Like in the comedy business, giving you weed. Everyone just give me weed and shit. But back then, damn, were you getting your weed? It was very important where you got your weed and who was giving it. But he had the good shit. So he would come in and give us fucking roaches. He had a Porsche. He had like the latest fucking 911 turbo. The latest shit. And he would just smoke fucking the best weed on his and go through to a bunch of strip clubs. And he would show up. And then because we'd hook him up with the list and give him the intel, the inside info, the inside scoop, he would come in. He would sign the fucking the sheets. He never paid. And then he would slip in a couple roaches, just roaches. Like we were fucking like piglets. Like he would just give us like little scraps of fucking francs. You know what I mean? He would go, boom, thank you for your fucking intel. Here's the shit that I won't even smoke. I was going to throw this away, but since you guys are so cool, hooking it up, he would give it to us. But dude, we were like scavengers. We're like, oh my God, this is wild man weed. Still didn't know his name. We would just go, dude, you got wild man weed? So we would take these roaches and then we would open them up and put them in a bowl. And then that weed would fucking send you, like, dude, we weren't used to. He I don't know where he was getting this. I'm like, who is this mysterious man? This wild, who is this guy? Right? And then I finally asked him. He was at the club. He came in. I'm like, dude, yo, come here real quick. I'm like, what the fuck do you do for a living? And he told me he invented the bell bottom. This guy invented, he said, he in the 50s, he ripped off Navy pants. Because Navy pants, like them dudes that go in the Navy, you know, the dudes that go in the Navy, they be dressing like Elton John and shit. You know what I'm saying? So they had tights on. They were tight, like in the thigh and over the knee. But then they would flare out, like, you know, like fucking Liberace designed it. You know what I'm saying? Those were Navy pants. This is what this dude told me. I'm like, what the fuck do you do, dog? You guys are, your weed is fucking taking us to other dimensions. What do you do? Where do you get your weed? How do you make your money? How are you dropping all this cash? And he said he invented bell bottoms and he ripped off Navy pants because I just made Navy pants into out of denim. And then they fucking, you know, he patented it. I don't know the fucking details. And he said he made a gazillion dollars, but he was a heavy smoker, smoked a lot of cigarettes all day. So he goes, I was just smoking weed, smoking cigarettes. I never smoked weed, just smoking cigarettes, made all this fucking cash, saving my money. This is what he said. This is the story. He goes, there's a customer strip club, saving his money, smoking cigarettes, boom. And then he got emphysema. He's on his deathbed, about to die. The doctor tells him, goes, dude, because he keeps coming back. He has bad emphysema, but he can't stop smoking cigarettes. He just keeps coming back and he's falling apart. Fucking dude has a gazillion dollars in the bank. He invented bell bottoms. Filthy rich. We went up to his fucking mansion in the Hollywood Hills. He wanted to sell to Joe Rogan. Me and Joe Rogan went up to his mansion to check out his mansion. And dude, when I get to the end of this story, dude, you're gonna fucking trip balls. This is a crazy story. So I'm finding out about this guy. No wonder he's got the best weed. No wonder he has all sorts of cash. So he says he's on his deathbed. Doctor said, dude, obviously you're not going to quit smoking. Because the only thing that's going to save your life is if you, instead of smoking cigarettes, you switch to smoking joints. That's the only thing that's going to save your life. That's what this dude told me. The dude who invented bell bottoms. I never forget this story. This is what he told me. I'm a grown-ass man. I'm like fucking, you know, 31 or some shit. And this guy's telling me this shit. I'm like, I never forget that story. And he said, so the doctor said, you're going to die, dog, if you don't switch to weed because these cigarettes are killing you. You have emphysema. So he said, fuck it. He switched, started smoking weed instead of cigarettes, and it changed his life. He got his health back. And he started realizing, oh, my God, I almost died with a gazillion dollars in the bank. What the fuck am I thinking? So the weed fucking woke his ass up. And he just said, fuck it. He's like 70 years old. He goes, I'm gonna go out guns a blazing. He goes, all I do every day is do whatever I can to fucking blow through this money by getting hookers. and strippers. Yeah. So he, what he does, this is what he does. He said he wakes up, he said his fucking mother's still alive. He wakes every day. He gives his mother breakfast. He does things with his mother. Boom. And then by like 3 o'clock, boom, you know, he's like, okay, boom, time to use the rest of the day and the night trying to find pussy, pay for it. He's going to go through his money. He's going to go. So every day he calls all the strip clubs and he just drives on. He told me all this shit. He goes, all I do is from 3 o'clock on, it's all about wasting this money and getting as much pleasure. I got to go through all this money before I die. Yeah. And he fucking bought a fucking mansion in the Hollywood Hills. Insane. He built it from scratch on a crazy view in the hills of the fucking Southern California downtown. It's like he made the most incredible pad, but he was a dick. He was a dick. And what he would do is he bragged about it. He goes, I boot camp these chicks. I take them up to my mansion and I boot camp them. I go, what the fuck is boot camping? He goes, he's really mean to them. He's like a military asshole pimp. You know what I mean? And he fucking is really ruthless with these girls. He was bragging about it. So he wanted to buy a bigger house. So he wanted to sell this house because he's trying to blow through the money. So Joe said, shit, let me check out this house. Cause I told him about it. I go, dude, this dude wants to sell a house right there in the Hollywood Hills, man. You should look at it. So I introduced Joe to him and we went up and checked out the house, and it was in the Hollywood Hills, not in a gated community.
Oh,
anybody could drive up to this house. So yeah. Joe, that was the first thing Joe noticed. He goes, dude, anybody could just walk. It was an insane house, brand new. He designed it, this dude. He went crazy. He goes, I'm gonna blow through all my money. So me and Joe went up there, we looked at the house, and yeah, he had like security cameras and shit everywhere, but anybody could just walk up to the door. And then we looked at the house and it was insane, but Joe's like, dude, you're a fucking sitting duck living in that house. Yeah. And I said, what do you mean? He goes, yeah, dude. I go, there's cameras everywhere. And he goes, yeah, you know what those cameras are going to capture? Joe said this. He goes, you know what those cameras are going to capture? A bunch of dudes in ski masks breaking in your fucking house and fucking shooting.
Exactly.
That's what that shit's going to capture. Joe said, this dude's a sitting duck, dude. Yeah. And he was such a dick to these girls. He was such a dick to them. And these girls got pimps, and he was a dick to them. Guess what happened?
They robbed his ass.
Murdered his ass.
Oh, shit.
They robbed and murdered him. He got set up by some hooker. And what I thought, we find out later, like one of his friends, he put it out. He goes, his friend said that dude, Wild Man, went to this one guy and gave him a CD of a rapper. And he said, if I die, it's going to be this guy. He's one of the girls that he uses pimp. So he knew he was in trouble. He knew some pimp was going to kill him. He was just an asshole. He was too much of a dick. And he had no friends, really. I mean, I don't know. It was amazing that he confided in this guy, but maybe he wasn't even his friend. Maybe it was like a, you know, like he just went to some guy that knew him. You know what I mean? But yeah, it was on the fucking, I got a phone call from one of the guys at the strip club. They go, dude, Wild Man's dead. He got murdered. It was all over the news. It was all over Channel 7, Channel 4. It was a big fucking deal for 25 minutes. it was like in and out. And then you see the news report, like they show his face, like, oh shit, that's Wild Man. God damn. I don't even know his fucking name. I knew it before, but I forget. I just call him Wild Man. one day he gave me some weed. I got home at night after a strip club. That's 3:30 in the morning. And I just, fuck, I was so high. I just got on my keyboard on my workstation and put together a song. I was so high, put together the song. I called it Wild Man.
That's crazy. Hey, Eddie, I hate to cut it short, but my baby's mom's texting
me. Oh, shit. No.
I know, dude.
Come on, we need more. Dude, I went too long with that strip club story. Can you leave with give me your best strip club story.
All right, hold on.
Your best one.
Damn, there's so many, brother.
Off the top of your head, what was the craziest customer, the weirdest customer?
Oh, we've had crazy customers. I would say one of the craziest stories is my basketball coach and woodshop teacher went to the club, and they coached me when I was in junior high. And then now that I was an older person, like, they were punks to me, dog, because I was like a kid that I just asked questions. Like, I wasn't being a punk. I was just more like, hey, man, like, why are we doing this shit? And they were like, you know, they didn't beat me, but they used to hit me full with, like, sticks and shit. Because I was a little fucker, though, you know what I mean? And he had his arm, his fingers cut off. I would make fun of him. And they came to the fucking strip club, dog, and fucking I fucked them up in the restroom.
What?
Yeah, dog. I just told the homie, I go, hey, man, these fools right here, they used to do bad things to me when I was in junior high, dog.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, but it was a trip. It was like the first time, like, I felt like a full revenge.
How did you fuck them up? How did that go down? They were taking a piss and you just fucking cold clocked them?
No, they went to the restroom and I went in there and I was like, what's up? And they're like, what's going on? How can I help you? And I was like, you don't remember me? You guys were my teachers. And they're just like in shock. And I was just like, think, think. And I didn't kick them on the floor or nothing and shit like that. But I was just like, you want some? Let's get some. And then I felt like a dick later, dog. Because, you know, they got families and kids and shit. But I don't know, dog. They had to feel the pain that I fucking had to give them. Oh, this is shit. The fucked up part. They didn't fucking leave. I left because I was scared. I told my homie to cover for me.
And they stayed and got lap dances?
Yeah, dog. These fools stayed and got lap dances. And it was just like, and the strippers, they didn't tip me out because they were like, hey, this fool says some cholo socked them up in the restroom. I know it's you. You can't do that to our customers. But yeah, that was one of the more like evil little revenges I got in life at the strip club.
Now, what do you got coming up? Is there anything big coming up with you?
When does this come out?
It's going to be like 3 weeks.
Okay, perfect. November 18th and 19th, I'm going to be in Austin at the Volcom with Willie Barcena.
Oh, shit. He's awesome. I love that guy.
And November 21st, I'm going to be on Kill Tony at the Volcom. December 15th. I'm going to be at the Comedy Store main room. Why don't you get on the show? Me, Eddie, it's me, Willie Barcena, Jesus Treco, Frank Castillo, and Edwin San Juan. You down?
It's all Mexican?
Yeah.
I'm down. Hell yeah. I love Mexican, when Mexicans get together and do comedy. Because back when I was growing up, with all due respect, Paul Rodriguez is a bad motherfucker, but we didn't have that many guys. Yeah. Paul Rodriguez, Chico, and the man.
He wasn't helping nobody. He wasn't putting nobody up. He wasn't running a room for nobody. And I'm not mad. He was doing
Nobody really was, though. Nobody was. Back then, everybody was, you know, for themselves. You know, it was like the Wild West. Like, you couldn't trust anybody and everybody. But nowadays, with everyone got a podcast, everyone's exactly. Helping each other out. And we realized, damn, we're stronger together. Then we are like separate. Like if you're like just separate, you better be fucking huge if you're going to be separate. But look at the top dudes, Joe Rogan, Dave Chappelle. What do they do? They're bringing like a whole crew together.
Yeah.
They're bringing the whole, that's stronger. You know, it seems like, you know, your ego would say, I want to be the best and, you know, fuck everyone else. And I hope everyone else does like shit. The worse they look, the better I look. And you get jealous when someone has a good set or something like that. You shouldn't be jealous. You should be like, oh, shit, there's another bad motherfucker. Yeah. I could use him on my show.
Straight up.
You know what I mean? That's how you should look at it. Not like, fuck, man, they're going to think he's better than me. And that's how people thought back then. So we had like Chico and the man. We have fucking Paul Rodriguez. We didn't have very many Mexicans. All the funny dudes were black. There was no, like, white dudes. There was no funny white dudes except for, like, Sam Kinison and Andrew Dice Clay. It was all black. Black comedians ruled.
I know.
They ruled. There wasn't no Mexicans. And then George Lopez came.
He's bad. He's good.
Yeah. George Lopez is awesome. Yeah. Who was the first Mexican after Paul Rodriguez in comedy to make some noise?
It was George Lopez. He took it over. After the Latin Kings of Comedy, George Lopez set was better.
He was the number one guy. He's the number one guy after Paul Rodriguez?
He's better than Paul. He's bigger. He makes Paul look like a junior varsity now.
Yeah.
I would
yeah.
say, this is my opinion, brother.
No, dude. I feel you. Hell yeah. You know,
but now Fluffy's beating him in numbers. And then
Fluffy fucking dude. He's doing like Dodger Stadium and shit. Yeah, that's how crazy is that?
In the playoffs.
Fuck. That's crazy shit, dude. That's I mean,
I was selling my DVD at his show in the parking lot.
Yeah. And then you got Joey Diaz. He's not Mexican, but that I consider him, you know,
he's Latin.
He's Latin. He's Cuban. That's Mexican. Same shit. Right? Like if there's a comedian from Guatemala and he's a bad motherfucker, you're like, that's my homie, right?
Nah.
No? No. No. That's not considered Latin. There's a Latin flavor. You could be from Ecuador.
Hey,
Mexican's totally different, right?
Yeah, like we're not from Latin America. We're from Northern America. We're like, we don't burn our bananas, eh?
Okay. So I'm a part-time comic, dude. I'm not a real comic. I fuck around with Sam Tripoli every now and then.
Yeah,
I'm not going. I'm doing a part-time, dog. So I really don't know the inside scoop on the Mexican comedy scene, because it's just me and Sam. We do conspiracy comedy. I don't really I'm not like in the Latin comedy circuit like you are.
If you're a Latino, I love you. But at the end of the day, in my head, I'm like, you know,
Mexican's better.
Mexico goes against you. Okay. That's all.
Yeah.
But you know, there's a lot of huge, like Felipe Esparza's blowing.
Yes. Frank Castillo's a bad motherfucker. Yeah, is he Mexican? Frank Castillo?
He's Mexican. Jesus Trejo's blowing up. You got that fool from Fools Gone Wild, Little Mystery. Fools Gone Wild.
Fools Gone Wild is my favorite shit, dog.
Yeah,
Fools Gone Wild, dude. That's the best shit. Dude. Hardcore Mexican shit, like Mexican humor, that only Mexicans understand. That's what Food's Gone Wild is. White people, a lot of shit, white people won't have any idea what's going on. Like a Menudo joke or something like that. They'd be like, what?
Yeah.
And dude, you're right there. You're right, dude. You're right there, dude. You're right in the fucking heart of the Mexican comedy movement. So when you invite me to a show, I'm honored.
Brother?
Hell yeah! You know you're basically from Santa Ana, so we're a little extra homophied.
Yeah. I love it. Hey, brother, sorry I have to jam and shit. It's just, you know, my bad. You know me, I'm a party animal, but my daughter's like, "Fool, Halloween's tomorrow. Me and my mom gotta get the costume."
That's tomorrow, dog. That's tomorrow.
Tomorrow in New York to see Joey.
Oh shit. Yeah. What are you going to do? You're going to do his podcast, or what are you going to do?
I'm going to do the Broadway theater with him.
Damn. Is that the residence thing he does?
It's at Sony Hall Theater on Broadway.
Dude, that's fucking awesome, man.
Yeah,
I just talked to him earlier today. we're talking football and shit. You know, he's into football. He's into football now more than ever. He was always kind of like, he was always a football fan. But and I'm a huge football fan. Like fucking hardcore Cleveland Browns, dog. Come on. Every Mexican should be into Cleveland Browns.
We used to wear the Browns jersey.
Yeah, every Mexican should be hardcore into the Browns, not Raiders. You guys should be into the Browns.
I'm a Raider fan because of my dad, and it just grew up.
No, I get it. But Raiders is the most hardcore. It's the most gangster for sure. Wearing Raiders gear and it says like Raiders, like we raid your shit. We're the ultimate. That's the ultimate marauders, you know, like gangsters, just straight fucking criminals. You know what I mean? Raiders.
Yeah.
A Raider is a criminal, right? I mean, Raider, like we're coming in and raiding you and taking your shit.
That's
like a Viking. You know, the Vikings did that shit. Hey, George. So what? Oh, before you go. That show that in December that you want me to jump on?
December 15th, main room, 10:30.
December 15th. Hold on.
Yeah.
I'm pretty. What day does that fall on?
It's on a Thursday.
Ooh, yes, that's perfect because that Friday I leave for Cancun the next day. So December 15th. Yep. I could do it, man.
Hell yeah.
Next day I fly to Cancun. We're doing combat jiu-jitsu. Teen Duel, aka Quintet. Quintet, but with fucking putazos. We do jujitsu with putazos, with cachetadas. That's how we do. That's how I do jujitsu. That's my show. No one else does that shit. Nobody else. Everyone just does straight jujitsu. I do jujitsu with cachetadas.
That's what's up.
Putazos. Hey, dude, I'm on that show 100%. Thank you. I'm honored that you invited me. Let's fucking do it. Thank you for doing this show. We got to do part two, part three. Dude, we can just go forever on the strip club stories. This be like a strip club break. Like a strip club break, right?
I'm going to have B-Store here. I'm going to have strippers here too. Hey, we can ask them questions.
Fuck yeah. Oh, dude, that would be fucking awesome. We're going to we could do that next. We don't have to wait. We don't have to wait for that shit.
Yeah, I'll go to the dressing room and I'll just be in there. We'll say, come here real quick.
You work Wednesdays?
Yes. Just date it.
Dude, how about you do my podcast on a Wednesday when you work at 1 p.m. and then you're introducing and still doing your job. Let's see if you could do a podcast and still doing your job.
Fucking down. That's a great idea.
You think you can do that, dude? You think you can? We could do that within the next couple weeks.
Okay. I'm down.
You down? You think the logistics. Are the logistics possible?
Yes, yes. I'll tell the strippers not to get in camera roll. We could just hear them from the side.
But the music's gonna be loud though, no?
Yeah.
So that's what I mean by the logistics. It's like, are we actually going to be able to pull it off?
Let's figure it out. Talk to your homies. Let's figure it out.
Do you think, man, the music's always going to be going on though. Fuck, for sure. Damn, that would be a good idea.
Dude, we'll try it without music or something.
Yeah, we'll do that too. But fuck, if you could do a podcast and take girls, maybe like for one day, maybe your strip club is like, we'll do a promotion or whatever. Like one day during this, just for 2 hours during the day on a Wednesday, can you DJ remotely? So you wouldn't be there. You would be at your house and remotely you'd be able to see what girl is next. Maybe you have an assistant, but you still got to take them on and take them off remotely. That's the only way it's going to happen.
I can do something.
Is that possible? Yeah, that would be fucking great. Let's do it. Hey, brother, George, I love you, man. Let's do it again. Real, like soon, dog. I'm not, hey, I'm serious.
Fucking let's do it idea. Soon. I'm down.
All right, man. See ya.
Take care, brother. Late.
Late.
Got me a real good girlfriend right now, you know? I'm at the age in life where I can appreciate a woman. 36. And it's cool, man, because, you know, like, I don't know if this has happened to you guys, but after you have sex with a girl real good, she will let you stay there with her. And she will hold you and ask you questions. If you have been kicked out the house with a Pop-Tart, you need to fuck better. Like, I had that sex, you know, after sex, a girl tried to see how smart you are. She was like, so what's up? What is it harder, to be a woman or a man? And as a man, I was like, a man, motherfucker. She's like, why? Because I got to answer this shit. Just to get more pussy. That's fucked up. She's like, nah, George, it's harder to be a woman. And I'm like, why? She's like, we do two things men can't. Fuck is that? It's like, we get pregnant, we get our periods. Can you do that? Well, my nose bleeds once in a while. Sometimes a little string be hanging out. I don't even catch that motherfucker. And I was like, fuck, man, we can't do that shit. Fuck. What do men do that women can't? Nah, they do it with a little shoehorn. That's it. And then it hit me like an old-ass Coke drip. Ladies, do you know what we do that you can't? We pull out. Come on, fellas, pulling out, that shit is hard. That shit takes timing. You could be one pump off of 18 years of payments. Just like, fuck, man, I don't know. Fucking pulling out, that's fucking degrading. Man, fuck. Sorry about your laptop, my bad. Every time you log on, you gonna remember me. And then I thought about it. I would trade something. If you can guarantee me I don't have to fucking pull out and I can stay in there like when I was young and I didn't know. Remember that shit just staying in there? Oh. I'll make you chilaquiles, man. I would fucking trade. What am I gonna trade? Fuck, I'm not gonna get pregnant. Fuck that shit. Fuck it, ladies, I'll get my period. You down, guys? They're like, nah, motherfucker. Imagine that, ladies, if men got our periods instead of you. The fucking world would be different. Imagine that, fellas, your friends come over on a Friday. What's up, dick? Let's go to the club, dog. Get out, pussy. I don't fucking feel good right now, dog. Fucking everything's been bothering me, dog. Fucking hurts right here, Hans. The fucking hurts, dog. I think my girlfriend's cheating on me, dog. Am I getting fat, dog? My fucking balls are bleeding, man. My name's George Perez. Peace.
The Jiu-Jitsu Dojo is the ultimate training ground for life. Jiu-Jitsu will accelerate the evolution of your being, your consciousness, your soul. Through this amazing art, you will prove to yourself that you can master anything you set your mind to.
Happy birthday, Eddie Bravo.
I leave for Brazil tomorrow.
I'm the road to Abu Dhabi.
Are you the Fear Factor guy?
I'm like 6 pounds over. Time to sweat it out.
Just imagine someone that has no idea how different your game is.
I'll tell you what this weekend was, man. It was a culmination point where all your hard work comes to like one great moment in time. You showed that you're a fucking champion, guy who goes against convention. You created your own shit and figured interesting ways to get around problems in jiu-jitsu. And shows you that great things are possible if you work hard, if you dedicate yourself and you use your creativity and you push through, your own human potential just goes up.
My 10th Planet Association has grown rapidly to over 70 academies worldwide, and their curriculums are all synced to 10th Planet headquarters located in downtown Los Angeles. I'm Eddie Bravo. I hope to see you on the mats.
You can tell it's real because it looks so fake.